I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clearer skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This Thursday, May 2nd, NBA Playoffs Betting Picks Edition of the NBA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Play their fantasy pick'em for a chance to win 100x in NBA, MLB, MMA, NHL, golf, and more. Sign up today at UnderdogFantasy.com using promo code NBA SGPN to get a 100% deposit match. We're also brought to you by NYRA Bet. Sign up today for a free $25 bet and a $200 deposit bonus with promo code SGPN25. Just go to nyrabets.com/SGPN25. Welcome everyone to the NBA Gambling Podcast, part of the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. It is Thursday, May the 2nd. Currently 11:09 on the East Coast, here to recap what we saw in the NBA playoffs on Wednesday night, and we'll get into the two games here tonight in the association for the NBA playoffs as well. And joining me here to help me break everything down on the hardwood, you guys know as the voice of the Tennis Gambling Podcast, the WNBA Gambling Podcast, the MLB Gambling Podcast, and of course here on the NBA Gambling Podcast, Scott Studio-Rochelle. Scott, what's going on, my man? How are you doing this Thursday morning?
They're doing pretty well. Hopefully the games tonight are more competitive. The games today kind of sucked. Yesterday, sucked. I was watching hockey because the basketball games were over at halftime, basically both times. The Heat never stood a chance. I said we were going to look back on that series in the middle of game three as how the hell did the Heat win a game? And that's exactly what happened because the Celtics killed them again and they won by 30 and change. As for the Clippers game, I had the game on until midway through the third quarter. And then at that point, the Mavericks ended up going on a massive run. I saw the dunk by Derrick Jones Jr., the and one. I saw the Clippers miss about 20 straight three-pointers, and the game was over. So I didn't really have to watch the fourth quarter. I don't think you missed anything if you ended up missing the fourth quarter. But, yeah, the games were terrible. Both teams won by 30-plus. So hopefully we get a more competitive slate of games here on Thursday.
Yeah, we think we mentioned it, that there was just going to be that one game for the Miami Heat where they were going to get hot from three-point land and they would win one game, at least in my eyes. And I think that's, you know, what ended up happening that one game. And then, you know, the rest has been history for the Boston Celtics, taking care of business against the Miami Heat, and they'll move on to face the winner of the Orlando Magic and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So, again, it was going to be tough sledding for the Miami Heat without Jimmy Butler, and, you know, him not being there, obviously, with the injury. So the number one seed moves on in the Boston Celtics, I guess, to no one's real surprise here. But, yeah, we'll see what happens with Miami in the offseason. You mentioned the other game. I thought Dallas would come out and play well. I went pretty heavy on them, -3, and then on the full game, pretty sweat-free, like you mentioned, a 30-point victory there. They take a 3-2 lead in that series as Game 6 will shift back to Dallas, and hopefully Dallas can close it out there if you are a Dallas Mavericks fan, or more importantly, a better if you took their series price for them to advance to the second round of the Western Conference playoffs. Two games on the schedule tonight, though, Scott. We've got the two Eastern Conference matchups, both Game 6s, Milwaukee and Indiana, and New York and Philly. Do you have anything you want to mention before we get into the games for tonight?
I'm trying to get as much to add from the games yesterday. I'm going to spend no time talking about the Miami series because I don't know what Miami was supposed to do. Miami was missing probably their two of their best three players. You can argue two of their best four. You can argue Rozier might be better than Hero, to be honest. Hero's had a really rough go of it recently. I know Heat fans can't stand him because he no-showed a game 5. I don't really care. Miami had no chance. They had no talent. They couldn't score. They couldn't reach 100. I mean, they weren't even close to being competitive in half these games, or most of these games. So, nothing really to take away from that one. For the Clippers, James Harden went back to being terrible in the playoffs after being good for the first... he was good for the first four games of the series. And they're gonna pay him a max contract. And it's going to be a serious problem for the Clippers during the offseason. Now, does Kawhi come back for Game 6? You might have to call him back because your team's on the verge of imploding. So I think Kawhi is probably going to play in Game 6. Westbrook has been awful. I don't care what anybody says involving advanced numbers, whatever. He's been terrible. The shooting numbers have been atrocious for Westbrook. He's been a complete liability as far as I'm concerned. And it looks like he is dealing with anger management issues on the court because it's not playing basketball half the time. It just feels like he's extremely aggressive and he's extremely annoyed and he's out of control the entire time. Westbrook's been, as far as I'm concerned, a complete sideshow in the series. And I feel like some people are criticizing him, but I think people have not realized just how bad he's been in this series. Westbrook has been awful for the last like 3-4 games of the series. I got to bring it up because he got a lot of credit for how he handled the playoffs last year when Paul George and Kawhi were injured. The Clippers were given props to basically reviving his career and were being reminded why so many people completely turned on Westbrook. It's because he's embarrassing himself on national TV night in, night out. He's been that bad for the last week and a half. And I want to actually dive into the numbers quickly for Westbrook. I don't know if you have his numbers in front of you. Do you have his numbers by any chance for the series?
You just wanted for the play. Yeah, give me a second. I got it here.
I can pull it up. I wasn't sure if you had it.
Yeah, I got it. So playoffs, 5 games, 21 minutes per game. He's averaging 6.4 points per game, 4.8 rebounds. More importantly, shooting 25.6% from the floor, 25% from beyond the arc, and 60% from the free throw line for a 33.8% true shooting percentage.
I think that kind of sums it up, doesn't it? Guy's playing 20-plus minutes per game. He has the ball in his hands all the time. He's shooting 25% from the floor. He's been awful. I don't really care how anybody else wants to describe it. I know that he's got energy, whatever that means. It's uncontrolled energy, so that doesn't mean anything. But if you're not going to be effective shooting, defensively, you've not been good either. I just don't think Westbrook has given any value at all in the series to the Clippers. So I wanted to mention that they're in trouble. Simply put, the Mavericks, I gave out -1.5 games to win the series when we did the Mothership show a week or two ago. I still feel good about it, but the Clippers are in serious trouble, and Kawhi probably has to play Game 6 because this narrative of them being better without him might have been fine with a really, really small sample size, but I think we just saw in Game 5, they need all the offense they can get because if Harden's not going to give you a solid 25 or so and Paul George might no-show another game, They need whatever offense they can get. So Kawhi's going to have to play game six. Hopefully he doesn't get injured again. They're in serious trouble. That's kind of my main takeaway. Yeah. I also wanted to mention, actually I have one more point, but I'll let you make any points you have on that. Do you have anything else you want to add or disagree with on that?
No, I mean, you mentioned, I mean, Russell Westbrook has been terrible. I've seen this movie with James Harden before that, and that he has a couple of great games as the series progresses long for James Harden. He just progressively gets worse if he gets into games fives, game six, and game sevens. But I mean, this is one game that he had a really bad game. And it was just for the Clippers that collectively, outside of, I mean, I'm not expecting to get much out of Russell Westbrook at this point, but when both Paul George and James Harden go combined 6 of 25, you're not going to win very many ball games. And it was just a really bad shooting night, just overall for the entire team. I mean, Norman Powell, 5 of 12 from the floor, 1 of 6. Russell Westbrook, you mentioned it, 0 of 3, 2 of 11 from the field. And
I couldn't hit jump shot. I mean, that's the story of the game. But
yeah, so it was just a bad shooting night.
Kawhi kind of has to play game 6 now, doesn't he?
I mean, at this point, I thought that even with Kawhi, the offense looked really bad. But even last night, I think it was just a bad shooting night. I don't know. I guess it was just coincidence that the two games that the Clippers won in the series were without Kawhi. It just messes up the offensive flow because you want a guy, you have to get a guy like that involved offensively. And when he missed prior to coming back, what was it, 10 straight games? It's going to take a little bit for you to get up to game speed. And I don't think that. I mean, at this point, you would probably have to put him out there, but I just feel like the Mavericks...
That's kind of my point. You can argue about all the momentum. They only scored 93 in game five. You kind of have to at this point.
Yeah,
but the other point I wanted to make was about Barkley, who went on the air, and he said that the reason why the Suns and the Lakers are terrible is because of roster and because of players. And he thinks that Vogel and Darvin Ham are good coaches. So I'm going to divide that takeaway or that quote into two different parts. I mentioned it before. I think the coaches are going to be the scapegoats. I think that Vogel is not a bad coach. I know Lonte would disagree with me. I think the roster was just objectively a horribly constructed roster. I think that they had no point guard. I think that they paid Beal a bunch of money, and Beal's not very good. Yeah. Mr. I'll be damned was damned because he was really bad in game four. And that was one of the worst games I've actually seen from a guy getting paid $50+ million per year. That was an all-timer for Beal in game four. He was that bad. So I agree with Vogel. I think Vogel's not that bad. I know Suns fans might think he could be better, but the roster was extremely flawed. Let's start there. Then Barkley talked about Darvin Ham. And the Lakers roster could be worked on. I think there were some issues. I think the supporting cast was not reliable enough. Having said that, I don't know how you can infer that Darvin Ham's a decent coach. I don't know how you reach that conclusion. People have had theories that Shaq and Barkley don't actually watch the games. They just watch a couple of games in the back room, like while the games are going on, and they'll like watch a little bit there. But
yeah.
I think Darvin Ham's a terrible coach. I think most people would agree. Not using his timeout in game five when the Nuggets wanted a massive run there in the third quarter was kind of damning in his own right. We've seen that all year long from Darvin, not to mention the lineups he's used, putting Vincent and Dinwiddie together in playoff lineups. The roster, I get, was flawed. I don't know how you make an argument that Ham is a good coach. You could think that he's like average at best, or you could think he's below average. Most think he's below average. A lot of people think LeBron is the coach of the team anyway. I just want to divide that into two different parts. I do agree that the Suns and the Lakers had poor roster construction. I get that. It's one thing to say that, but at the other point, I don't know what argument you have that Darvin Ham's a good head coach. I do not see an argument for that.
I don't think I think Frank Vogel is an average.
At least he has a title. He has a title. Yeah. Something you can and
lose. Especially in the circumstances where they did win it in the bubble.
Yeah.
I think that those elements and just being, I guess, stuck in there, you know, because of COVID or whatever. You got to give them credit for, number one, I guess, keeping the team together at that point and just making sure they still played a good basketball. I agree 100%. I think that you and I talked about this when we did the season win totals at the beginning of the year, that when they did acquire Bradley Beal, that we've seen this movie before as well, that when you have three superstars, whatever you want to call it, that your supporting cast is going to significantly suffer. And maybe not having Grayson Allen could have something to do with that. Maybe they would have won a game here or there for the Phoenix Suns, because Grayson Allen was really good in the season for the Phoenix Suns around Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal. But I, going back to your Darvin Ham point, yeah, I agree that I think he's bottom six, bottom seven,
definitely bottom five.
Yeah. And I was just being generous and saying six or seven, but you're not going to win when it comes to the playoffs. Yes, you have to have the talent as well, but I think coaching is a lot more important as well, because you have to make those game to game adjustments. You have to make those in game adjustments. You have to make those adjustments at halftime. And that's why Eric Spoelstra, we believe, is one of the best head coaches when it comes to the playoffs, because we saw last year with the roster that he had, they made it all the way to the NBA Finals. You talk about a coach like Mike Malone. Yes, he has a great talent on his team, but he significantly outcoached Darvin Ham in this series as well. So some of the best head coaches that have the titles, those are the coaches that have the ability to make those adjustments. And Darvin Ham just doesn't have that capability. Sometimes he's just standing there on the sideline, walking up and down with his hands in his pockets, not knowing what the hell to do. So I completely disagree with what Charles Barkley said, because, I mean, imagine us, if we said at the beginning of the season, Scott, that there was going to be no LeBron, no AD, no Kevin Durant, no Devin Booker, no Bradley Beal. I know the Bucks are dealing with injuries with Giannis and Dame, that those guys weren't going to be in the second round of the playoffs. People would have thought we were crazy. Yeah. So, I agree. Frank, just going back to your point, Frank Vogel, I think, is above average head coach, and Darvin Ham is going to be fired sooner rather than later, and it'll be that they mutually agreed to part ways. So, yeah, I'll leave it at that, but I don't know if you have anything else more to add there.
And then the point I'm just going to make is that Phoenix was – they brought in a defensive-minded coach in Vogel, and I'm not shocked that Bradley Beal and Nurkic and Devin Booker – didn't exactly result in being a good defense.
Yeah.
At some point, you got to recognize that the philosophy of the coach and the roster are not always going to mesh. And Beal just completely, I don't know if he ghosted the little dap up that Vogel was trying to give him in that fourth quarter, that playoff game, but I just think Beal's a loser. Like, I just think that entire experiment with this big three that Phoenix tried to create isn't Vogel's fault. He'll be the scapegoat for it. I think Beal's just a loser. I don't think that he plays winning basketball, and I feel like Vogel is, in this case for Barkley, going to be the scapegoat. I think Vogel is actually a decent head coach. He does not bother me. I think the roster was a terrible fit for him, which is why it's tricky for Barkley's quote, because I think he's right for half of it, but the Ham part's just completely wrong.
Yeah, I agree. Three-time pointing out, it's also the GM's at fault also. I agree with that.
The GM's hand might be forced. Polinka, you could argue. I'm not. Yeah. James Jones is in a weird spot, because Ishbia was like, all right, I want Durant. It's my team. I'm getting Durant. All right, it's my team. I'm getting Booker. At the end of the day, the owner's paying your checks. Like, if the owner wants a player and tells you get this player, the GM's hands are kind of tied. I don't know if James Jones done a good job or a bad job as GM, but I am going to throw it out there. I blame the Phoenix situation more on Ishbia, who seems, according to all reports, like a very hands-on owner who wants to be involved in every single decision being made.
Carolina Panthers, Dave Tepper-esque.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to be an interesting offseason. I think for the Lakers, number one, they were missing some key role players. I think Vanderbilt would have made a difference on the defensive side of the basketball for them. Christian Wood, I've seen him with the Rockets. He's just a selfish basketball player in my eyes. Could I give you some minutes off of the bench to give AD some rest? And they were also, and then Gabe Vincent just never really was healthy at all this season. And we saw how important he was to the Miami Heat last year when they made their run to the NBA Finals. So, I mean, we'll see if LeBron's even back with the Lakers next year. You know, we'll save those conversations for the offseason, but I think that for Charles Barkley to make those comments, half of it was correct and half of it was incorrect, like you mentioned there, Scott.
Do you think they watch the games?
I think they probably – I don't think they watch – I don't think they do. I think, like you mentioned, they probably watch
– they watch the games on TV in the back room.
Yeah. And then they'll, you know, they're maybe glancing at it, but they're probably doing other stuff in the back and, you know, just horsing around with each other, whatever the case might be. But people watch it to watch them just tune in and just for the
entertainment. It's a great show.
It's
just been brought up in the past about Shaq and how he makes a lot of opinions comparing Wemby to Bol Bol and like all these BS opinions. And you can't tell if it's clickbait or if he actually just doesn't watch any games.
Yeah,
probably both. But Barkley could argue it's the same thing.
I agree. Yeah. All right, Scott, before we get into the games here for tonight in the NBA playoffs, it's playoff time, like I mentioned. Make sure you guys tune into our show, the NBA Gambling Podcast, of course, and the Hockey Gambling Podcast. Like Scott mentioned, NHL playoffs are going off as well. You know, I've been watching some of that as well, along with the NBA. And we'll get you guys locked in and hopefully give out some more winners for the exciting playoff action. Plus, it's Derby Week on the Sports Gambling Podcast. Tune in as the guys get you ready for the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. All right, Scott, let's get into the games here for tonight. Got one earlier start because they are both on the East Coast here tonight in the NBA. We'll go with a 6:40 Eastern start. That's going to be the Milwaukee Bucks. They are in Indiana to take on the Pacers. This series is 3-2 in favor of the Indiana Pacers. Pacers looking to close it out here in Indiana on their home floor. And the Bucks looking to even up the series to force a game 7 back in Milwaukee. But right now, Scott, Pacers -8 in favor of as home favorites here. Total is sitting at 214.5. Don't expect Dame to play in this game. Don't expect Giannis to play in this game either. So it'll be the same movie as it has been for the Bucks over the last two games here. But 8 is the number here, Scott. What are you thinking about this game?
So I still see some 8.5s out there. I'm taking Milwaukee in this game. And the spread is crazy. I understand Indiana ended up covering this line in game 4. They also hit 20-plus three-pointers, and they only won by 13. Why is Indiana laying this many points? I get the argument is Milwaukee shorthanded, but Milwaukee buried this team at home in game 5. Now, you could argue Indiana was already looking ahead to game 6 at home, and they didn't have the greatest sense of urgency for game 5. It's why Terrell and I picked Milwaukee for game 5. The problem is Indiana is still inexperienced, and Rick Carlisle hasn't won a playoff series since winning the title with the Mavericks. So why do I have faith in Indiana to not only win a game like this, but to win by margin? You could argue that Milwaukee was going to roll over in game 5. I thought they might when they were down by a lot in the first quarter. They didn't. They looked very sharp. And I think that Indiana did the dumbest thing possible, which is even though you have a home game in your back pocket, you gave a dead team life. You were thinking that without Dame and Giannis, we knew was not going to play, Milwaukee was screwed. And if you put together a good 24-36 minute stretch, Milwaukee, based on Doc Rivers' playoff history, might roll over. Instead, you gave them extra life and you gave them extra, I'd say, positive morale. And I think that Milwaukee's experience can help them out in this case. But Indiana defensively is just a horrible team. Indiana has the second worst defensive rating in the playoffs, and they were 24th in the regular season. They can't guard anybody.
Yeah.
So why would I pick a team that plays no defense to win by basically 3 possessions? I can't do that. I think Milwaukee has a shot to win the game, to be honest. It wouldn't totally shock me. You have all the pressures on Indiana. You're a team that hasn't won a playoff series in a long time. Carlisle hasn't won a playoff series in basically 13 years. Milwaukee's playing with house money. I think a house money team is dangerous, and I think that Milwaukee proved in game 5 they're not going to roll over with Dame and Giannis being out. I think the spread is insane. I'm going to lean to the over, but I think Milwaukee, who has scored at least 108 points in every game of the series, is going to be able to keep this game competitive. In Milwaukee +8.5, give it the team total over 102.5 at -110.
I don't think we've talked about how great Chris Middleton has been for the Milwaukee
Bucks. Double machine.
Yeah, in the absence of Giannis and Damian Lillard. I mean, you take a look at the last 3 games, 42, 25, 29. We'll talk about player props here in a minute, but I agree with you 100%. I love the over in this game. Again, like you mentioned, Indiana doesn't play a lick of defense, and we know what they can do offensively. Milwaukee has been very, very good offensively as well, just because how bad Indiana has been on defense. And that's been without Giannis, and that's been without Dame, at least over the last two games. And I know Bobby Portis bounced back very nicely after getting ejected in game four. In game five, he scored 29 points for the Milwaukee Bucks. So did Chris Middleton. Both guys had double-doubles, and that was enough for them. And they got, you know, timely threes from Malik Beasley. I want to see a little bit more contribution off of the bench, with whether it's Covington knocking down a couple more shots for them or Gallinari knocking down a couple more shots for them. But you're going to expect Bobby Portis and Chris Middleton to be out there for at least 40 minutes here tonight. Patrick Beverley even had a double-double in that game. He had 13 points, 12 assists in game five. But yes, I am on the Bucks here as well. Plus the eight. I think this one comes down to the wire. Do I think the Bucks can force a game seven here? Absolutely, because like Scott mentioned there, that this team is not rolling over. This team was down 3-1 in their home building, and they came out and put together a great effort. So I'm expecting a competitive effort here tonight from the Milwaukee Bucks. I will be on them here as well. Scott, you mentioned you do like the over, but more importantly, you mentioned that the Bucks have been able to score points even without Dame and Giannis in this series. And that's why I do like their team total to go over here tonight. 102.5 is the number for the Milwaukee Bucks for their team total. Again,
for Indiana's defense, that's such a crazy low total.
Yeah. So I like that. I also do like the full game over, but I think my more favorite bet as far as the total goes, Milwaukee Bucks team total over 102.5. Do you have anything else to add about the total?
Not really. Indiana, even if they do win this game comfortably, wants to play with pace. So they're going to try to go up tempo, and I think that's going to result in more possessions for Milwaukee to work with. So, yeah, I'm going to dare Indiana's defense to do something. I'm going to dare Carlisle to actually win a first-round playoff series for the first time in over a decade. I think Milwaukee's alive to win the game. I feel like a lot of people are automatically kind of penciling the Pacers in, saying, oh, they no-showed game five because they had game six in their pocket. It's a dangerous game. You give motivation to a team that's basically dead in the water, and I feel like that's a really dumb way to go about it. And Milwaukee has a lot of veteran leadership. Middleton's been around the block. He's won a title. Beverly's been around for a long time. The entire roster's been around for a long time. It would be really funny if Doc Rivers came back from 3-1 down. That would be a hilarious like flip of fate there, which I'm rooting for at this point. But I do think Indiana's overvalued. So we saw Indiana even at home in those two games. They won in overtime against Milwaukee in a game that was really close. And I know Haliburton had the game winner, but they could have lost that game. And the game after, they hit 20-plus three-pointers, shot 50-plus percent from three, and they still only won by 13. You shoot that well from three against an injured team, you should win by at least 20. I think Milwaukee can hang in there, and I think they actually have a shot to win the game.
Player props, what are you looking at?
For player props, your Middleton rebounds is tricky because it was such a gold mine for the last couple of games, but now his rebounds are at 9.5, which I don't think I can actually take. I think Portis will have a good game. I don't mind Portis PR. He came back focused and provided a lot of energy for Milwaukee. He had a double-double with 20-plus points in Game 5. Haliburton unders I might be tempted by because he has a back issue now, and if I'm picking Milwaukee to actually keep this game extremely close, that means Halliburton's not going crazy from three. So I think Haliburton might struggle offensively. Beverly was solid defensively last game. I know his overall stat line for Haliburton wasn't amazing, but it was not awful. I see a similar story here for Haliburton. I think that he'll have a decent game, nothing amazing, but give me the under on Haliburton points.
Yeah, I just see an 8.5 for Chris Middleton rebounds on DraftKings right now, if you want to go with that angle as well. But yeah, I mean, for the Bucks side, it's going to be led by, again, Chris Middleton. His number's at 26.5 for his points. Malik Beasley, I mean, be tempted by 11.5 because, like I mentioned, that they'll need somebody outside of Middleton and Bobby Portis to show up in this game. Scoring-wise, I think Middleton can be live to knock down a couple three-point shots here. If you don't want to play his 11.5 points, his three-point prop is at 2.5 at minus 125. I don't hate that. Maybe a bounce back Pascal Siakam game. I know he was fantastic for this team in the first couple games there for the Indiana side. 36, 37, but then he's tailed off of the last three games, 17, 13, and 12. Hasn't been shooting very well. I mean, as great as he did in the first two games, obviously the law of averages there. But Could be a bounce back game for him, but I would, again, be on Middleton because I know, number one, he's going to get the minutes. He's also going to get the shot volume there for the Milwaukee Bucks. So I still don't hate that number at 26.5 for Chris Middleton. Anything else for this game, Scott?
Not really. I want to throw in one other piece of information. There was the referee referee assignments that ended up getting announced, and Tony Brothers is getting this game. Do you know what the home team point differential is in Brothers' 5 playoff games so far this season?
I'm going to guess it's not good. I'm going to go like -7.
That's actually very good. It's -7.2.
Yes. I know the next ref, we'll talk about that at...
Yeah, that's the point. Is people are focusing a lot on the next ref. Then I'll talk about this one.
Yeah.
Brothers has been horrible for home teams.
Do you have the actual like game log in front of you? Who's refed?
That I don't have. It might involve a Minnesota game in there, and that might be what skewed it. But the point is that home teams have been outscored by 7+ points in Brothers' 5 playoff games. So he actually is the opposite of home cooking so far, if that's worth anything to you.
Yeah, I think I'm one of those guys. I don't think a lot of people do buy into it, but when it comes to officiating, especially this time of year, I really do buy into that narrative.
Massive, though.
Seven is pretty massive.
Seven's pretty massive. It's not as massive as the next ref we're going to talk about for home teams, but still.
Yeah, and I'll try to dig up Tony Brothers before we get off of air here, so if I can find it, because we'll get to the next game here in a second, the second game of the night. That's going to be the Sixers and the Knicks in Game 6. But before we do get to that game here, Scott, let me tell everyone about the newest sponsor here on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. That is going to be NYRA. Bet the run for the roses with NYRA bets. Score big on the Kentucky Derby with a double dose of rewards. Sign up today for a $25 free bet and $200 deposit bonus with promo code SGPN25. Join now to claim your $25 free bet and $200 deposit bonus at nyrabets.com/SGPN25. If you need more, bet Kentucky Oaks Day with a $30 bonus. Opt in and bet at least $150 each on Belmont at the Big A and Churchill Downs, at least $30 win or lose. We're giving you an extra $50 for Derby 150. Bet $250 each on Belmont at the Big A and Churchill Downs for a $50 bonus. Win or lose, visit nyrabets.com to opt in. And the Triple Crown is officially here. Opt in and bet at least $25 on the Kentucky Derby and Preakness Stakes and get a $10 bonus on Belmont Stakes Day, win or lose. NYRA has everything you need for the fastest 2 minutes in sports with confidence, for expert picks, betting insights, promotions, and more. Visit nyrabets.com. Join now to claim your free $25 bet and a $200 deposit bonus at nyrabets.com/SGPN25. All right, Scott, the next game on the schedule here, we've got Game 6 between the New York Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers.
Somehow we're here for Game 6.
Somehow, some way, led by Tyrese Maxey, may or may not have traveled, according to the 2-minute report that came out, which I think is absolutely useless, but here we are, Game 6, back at home for the Philadelphia 76ers, looking to force Game 7. Currently, as it stands, Scott, Sixers are favored by 3 points currently over on DraftKings. I see that as a consensus number right now. The total is up a tick, depending on your shop, 200.5 or 201 here. Let me adjust this banner here real quick. So I see, 201s across the board here. Injury report. Bojan Bogdanović is done for the entire year with their New York Knicks advance or not. He is opting for left foot surgery. Julius Randle, we know. Mitchell Robinson is officially questionable with a left ankle sprain. For the Sixers, Joel Embiid is on the injury report with a questionable tag, but we do expect him to play. And Robert Covington is out with a left knee bone bruise. Game 5 was thrilling, forcing overtime for the Sixers. Give them some credit. I mean, give them a lot of credit for the way, number one, Tyrese Maxey played in that game, leading the Sixers to force overtime and eventually winning it in overtime as well to get here to game six. Obviously, the big story in this matchup, Scott Foster, crew chief here tonight for this game. I'll quickly throw out the stats for Scott Foster, at least in the playoffs here. So he's reffed five games this season in the playoffs, and the home team are 4-1 against the spread. And no, it's the other way around. I'm sorry. So home teams are 5-0 against the spread, and they're 4-1 straight up. I have the game log here in front of me on which games he has actually officiated here, Scott. But Foster on the game, Sixers -3. Maybe the league wants a game seven here. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
So I do want to ask, though, I have a couple of games listed for Scott Foster. Do you want to guess what the home team point differential is in his playoff game so far?
So this one is going to be a little bit more substantial.
Tony Brothers, once again, was a -7, whatever, but we'll stick with the random numbers. So he was at like 7.
I think Foster is probably in double digits, so I'm going to go like 11.
It's closer to like 14, 15.
Yeah. So here's the game log, and I've been keeping track of this. So game one, he was actually on this particular series between the Knicks and the Sixers. He reffed game one at Madison Square Garden. Game two that he reffed was the Nuggets' victory in game two against the Lakers. He reffed game three between the Orlando Magic and the Cleveland Cavaliers. We saw what the Magic were able to do in that game. The only loss that a home team suffered straight up was the Phoenix Suns in game four back in their building. They did cover the spread in that game. And then game five, which we just talked about with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Indiana Pacers, where the Pacers lost that game by 23 points did the Bucks win that game by. And now he's here in game six, reffing this matchup. What could go wrong here, Scott?
Well, just to ask, though, so you said that his record for home teams was 5-0 ATS, 4-1 straight up?
Yes.
So now I'm confused, because there's no way Denver covered the spread in game two.
Let me double check this here, because
Murray had the game winner, but there's no way they were only favored by like 1.5 points.
Okay, so then it is 3-2 against the spread.
Okay.
Let me correct myself there.
I just wanted to make sure about that.
Yeah, you give your handicap.
Okay, cool. I'm going with Philly in this one. I feel like I don't want to say it's a similar story to what happened with the Indiana-Milwaukee game five, because I know that this game was a lot closer, but Philadelphia was dead. You give extra life to a team that had no life. It just feels like a spot where, besides the Scott Foster angle, which is the cherry on top for me, I thought the series was going 7 anyway. I kind of just expected this to be a marathon series. We saw how close the betting spread of the betting lines were when the series started. Not the greatest indicator, because the Suns were favored against the Timberwolves and they got swept, but the Sixers were favored against the Knicks, and we kind of thought it'd be a bit of a longer series, and we're one game away from that. Now, the Knicks, the issue I have with them is the fact that besides Brunson, I don't trust anybody offensively. DiVincenzo was their probably second best offensive player for most of the season after the Randle injury. He's been invisible for most of the series. He had the big three-pointer in game two, but he's kind of been an afterthought. And Anobi's been okay offensively, not great. Hart's three-point shooting was great to start the series. That's fallen off a cliff. He can't shoot anymore. So the problem that I have is that Brunson has to keep taking 30-plus shots per game. I don't care about the number of shots. The efficiency's been there. The problem is I don't know if I trust anybody else on the Knicks' team to step up and give them a great offensive showing. Embiid was not good at all in the last game, in game five. He had a triple-double. I know he did. Watching it, he was useless for most of the game. I thought he was really, really bad. He had 9 turnovers. He was great in overtime, though. Overtime, he picked it up. I'll give him props for that. But Embiid was not very good. Maxey gave them 40 and change. The problem that I have is that the Knicks have to rely on Brunson to have a monster game, and they have to piece together scoring from other guys. The Sixers have two guys who can have monster games, Embiid or Maxey. That's a massive luxury. I think it matters. I'm going to take Philly in the spot. I think Philly wins this game by potentially 8 or so, but I think Embiid will play better. He was better in the second half as the game went on. I think Maxey will play well, because I don't think the Knicks can actually guard him. If Brunson has an off game, the Knicks basically automatically lose. which is kind of ironic because they've won the first two games when he was not very good. But as the series has progressed, Brunson has basically had to carry this team offensively to even have a shot at winning games. I'm going to take Philly here. I like the scoring depth more, and I think that at home they'll be able to get it done with Scott Foster as the ref. Give me the Sixers minus the points.
Yeah, so I haven't been able to find the game log, but he did officiate. So I think it may be that it's 4-1 each way. Okay. And the ATS loss would be the
Nuggets
Denver Nuggets in game two. Yeah, so 4-1 and 4-1. But yeah, nonetheless, yeah, I'm on the Sixers here as well. Let's take the Scott Foster piece out of it, like you mentioned, right? And we talk about the X's and O's matchup, right? Joel Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, I expect them to be out there 47, if not the entire game, because this is do or die for them.
Embiid probably not, because we saw what happens when he plays the entire second half. Yeah. He's gonna get minutes on the bench.
Yeah. Then I do expect Maxey to be out there for the full, 48 minutes and then beyond if it does get to overtime again. And with the New York Knicks side, it's that what we saw in the first couple games is that Jalen Brunson was not very efficient, but they got contributions from guys like Josh Hart, Dante DiVincenzo, and that just hasn't really continued throughout the series, right? I mean, we've seen flashes of them knocking down a couple shots here and there after those first two games, and it's really just been Jalen Brunson. I mean, he's averaging 30 shot attempts per game, and rightfully so, because he's only the offense right now for this New York Knicks team, and then just hoping that you get something out of some of the other players, whether it is Josh Hart, whether it is OG Anunoby, whether it is Miles McBride, who's had a couple of great shooting games. Forgot as to mention well. McBride.
Yeah, he's been very
yeah. good. Yeah. And then for the Sixers side, even Tobias Harris was able to contribute 19 points in the last game in 49 minutes. He was 7-11 for the floor.
They just have a lot of guys.
Yeah. And so I think they have more guys. And again, I said this a lot, that the role players rise a lot more at home. So I do expect a little bit more from Kelly Oubre. Maybe this is that Kyle Lowry game that we saw that flash last year where he had that random 30-point game. I'm not saying he has to go out there and score 30 points, but he's able to knock down, two or three shots for you from beyond the arc. I think that's going to be very, very important. Batum coming off of the bench. Defensively, he's been absolutely fantastic. Rebounding the basketball there for this team as well. You can say what you want about campaign. I think it's also that you get those flashes of him from one or two games where he's able to knock down some three-point shots for you and then just absolutely looks like he doesn't belong in the NBA. I think that is going to be another game where we see Maxey have a great night. I think Embiid has a great night as well. So I'm on the Sixers here as well, minus a three. I think we do see a game seven in Madison Square Garden, because what more would the league want than a game seven happening at Madison Square Garden on the East Coast? So I'm on the Sixers minus three here. Scott, the total's at 201 in this game. Do you have any thoughts on the total?
So the total at first glance seems very low because every game besides one has had at least 205. However, a reminder that the 218 that we saw in game five is misleading because it went to overtime.
Right.
So that game ended up actually landing at, I believe it was 97 apiece.
97 apiece, yeah.
So that ended up going under. The issue is it is an elimination game. So if Philly goes down, are they just going to be fouling like crazy down the stretch? They might. But I'm expecting this to be an absolute rock fight, half-court battle in the fourth quarter. I've been on overs in the series. It's been working out well for me because it's 4-1. But I think for this game, I might actually lean under. Okay. I don't feel great about it, but what I saw in Game 5 was a matchup between two half-court offenses, and it just seemed like an absolute grind. I think Scott Foster will let the players play a bit, and Embiid, I think, will go to the foul line a bunch in the first half, but I am going to lean to the under in this game. I don't see both teams reaching 100. I just don't see that happening. This has a really ugly, grinded-out feel to it, at least based on my projection for the game. I think that it's going to be a matchup where both teams kill each other for 48 minutes. I'll go with the under.
I'm curious to see if there's any stats or trends about teams that played in an overtime game and what the numbers look like after the overtime game.
It might vary based on days off, but there is only one day off as opposed to two.
Yeah, and that's the part that, because you take a look at the number of minutes a lot of these guys play, especially the main players, like Maxey played 52 of the 53 potential minutes. Tobias Harris, 49. Joel Embiid, 48. You go to the Knicks side, three different guys played 50 or more minutes for the Knicks. Josh Hart played all 53 minutes. Jalen Brunson, 51. OG Anunoby, 50 minutes. So you probably do see some tired legs. I think this is going to be just one of those, like you mentioned, grinded out type of games here between these two teams. So I think I like that under as well with you on this game here, under 201 right now. Maybe there's some public money that comes in and this number goes up a little bit, so maybe you want to wait. But I do like the under in this game here with Scott, like he mentioned. Player props in this game, Scott, what are you looking at?
So if I'm picking an under, then I have to pick some guys to struggle. I got to just figure out which ones I want to take. Embiid rebounds, I am tempted by. I know he chooses not to rebound half the time, but he had a monster game on the boards in game five. And that was a big story for the Sixers, was that they lost game four, big reason for that they couldn't grab a rebound in the final quarter. Knicks went super small, and they grabbed every rebound. And I feel like the Sixers took it to heart. That was one of the main adjustments that Nurse ended up making, was just trying to, I guess, encourage his guys to constantly crash the glass. And that did work out well, as Embiid had, I forgot how many rebounds he had in game five. It was, he definitely had like 14 plus. I just don't remember the exact number in the end. Do you have any rebounds he had?
16.
He had 16. It wasn't overtime, but the point is he went over in regulation anyway. I think Embiid rebounds is worth considering, especially with Mitchell Robinson being banged up. I do think that you might end up seeing Embiid have a good game on the glass. We think it's going to be a rock fight, so I am going to stick with that type of script. So Embiid rebounds, I'm going to go with, I got to quickly pull up what the actual number is for his prop, but I'm assuming it's going to be 10. What is it? 10.5?
10.5 minus 135 on DraftKings.
Yeah, I'll take the over on that. I think he's in line for a pretty big rebounding game, at least for his standards. Give me another 13-14 rebounding game by Embiid. Besides that, I'm not going to back Tobias Harris to have another good playoff game. Lightning, you know, doesn't tend to strike twice in that, you know, in the same spot. Okay. So we'll see what happens with Tobias. Props to him for actually showing up for a game. But I am wondering where I want to go with the rest of this. I thought about going DiVincenzo under for points because he's just been so bad in the series based on efficiency. Mm-hmm. His points are at 11.5, though, which he's going under in 4 or 5. But 11.5 might seem like that's a number where it should be at. I was kind of hoping it'd be higher than that. Do you want to fade Mitchell Robinson, who is banged up? He might be in foul trouble. His points, rebounds, and assists are at 11.5. He's gone under 9.5 in the last three games.
And yeah, I think that might be the angle.
So I think I do like Mitchell Robinson under PRA.
Yeah, I think that if Robinson does end up playing in this game, that if we're talking about the Scott Foster angle, that either Hartenstein or Mitchell Robinson is going to be the one or two guys, or one of the two that's going to be in foul trouble.
Robinson does foul a lot, so that, yeah, they both do, to be honest. So
I feel like it will be Isaiah Hartenstein because he's a more healthy guy, and then they just make sure that, or they make Mitchell Robinson be out there and try to attempt to guard Joel Embiid. But could, like you mentioned, with Isaiah Hartenstein, last or the fouls in this game, three, 4, 5, 5, and yeah, 3 in the last game.
What's Robinson at?
Robinson, let's see.
He's playing, of course, less minutes, but still.
Yeah. 3-3-1-3-0. But he's also playing a lot less minutes.
Yeah, he also is injured and he has no offensive talent. So he's going to only have to catch lobs to score. So I like the PRA under for Robinson. You?
Yeah, I was tempted by, I wanted to look at Lowry, but it's already low enough at 7.5. And he could just random hit a couple threes then get to the free throw line like he flops his way there. He didn't score
last game, right? It's your last game?
Yeah, he was 0-4. And that's why I feel like he bounces back here tonight. I'll be curious to see what his three-point prop is because a lot of his shots will come from beyond the arc. Yeah, he had 0 points, 2 rebounds, 5 assists in that last game. So I think he may bounce back here tonight. Other than that, Nick Batum was the other one I mentioned. I'm sorry. For his rebounds, I know he's going to play at least 30 plus minutes at minimum. His rebounding prop number is at 4.5. He's done a really good job actually rebounding over the last couple games here for the Philadelphia 76ers. Trying to pull up. He had 8 in the last game in game 5. He had 7 in game 4. He had 6 in game 3. And then he had 5 in game 2. So he's gone over 4.5 rebounds in four of the 5 games, including all four straight games for the Philadelphia 76ers. If you want to take a look at that, I think that might be a sneaky one here, especially if you're, like we mentioned, we're expecting this one to be a little bit more of a rock fight and rebound.
Can we reach out to Underdog for a line on Lowry flops or Lowry hits the ground? Can we get a higher or lower on that?
We can try. We got some few connections there. Maybe we can see if they can do like a special there for us. But
by the way, there is breaking news that just. I do have breaking news dropping from Woj involving the Milwaukee game.
Breaking news. Yes.
Giannis and Dame are both, quote, working to try and make a return for game 6 tonight. Both, okay. It's unclear, but there are rumors that Giannis and Dame are going to try to play. I'm not sure how that's breaking news or not, because he didn't say anything. Of course, they want to be out there. But according to Woj, they're going to try to make it work. So maybe you might end up seeing Giannis or Dame. So there you go.
All right. Here we go. I would maybe expect to see Dame out there. An Achilles injury or is it a knee injury?
I think it was Achilles. I think he re-aggravated it, though, which sounds like he's going to be out for longer. Giannis coming back wouldn't shock me, because even if he can't score, at least he can rim protect. He can give you something defensively. I don't know what Dame's supposed to do if he can't move. What's Dame supposed to do? He's already a traffic cone on defense. What's he supposed to do?
Yeah.
So.
All right. Anything else for this game?
No. I don't know if you have any other player props you want to add. Do we think Brunson has another monster game, or do we think that he's going to struggle? Because I think he actually might struggle in this game.
Yeah. He's at 33.
The volume, though, is so high for his shot attempts. I don't know if you can take it under.
And that's what makes me nervous, is that he's averaging 30 shot attempts per game. And he's got 39, 47, 40, and he also gets to the free throw line as well.
Yeah.
But just based off of pure shot volume alone, I just can't get there with.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Do you think Maxey has another monster game? I guess what I'm asking is, if we're both picking Philly, what exactly is your prediction for the actual performances by Maxey and Embiid? Is Maxey great? Embiid sucks? Does Embiid play great and Maxey sucks? Or they both play well?
I think it's Embiid, man. Like, he can't move. Like, you're watching the series, he can't move at all. At least for Maxey, we know that he was dealing with an illness or whatever the case might have been. But, he still came out in that game, dropped, 30-some-odd points? I forgot which game it was. Mm-hmm. And the last game, he dropped, 46 for the Sixers? So I think if you want to take, like, a point under, I think it just may be Embiid.
Okay. That's, I think Maxey's going to have a great game.
All right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially being back home as well. All right. Before we get into our lock and dog, or sorry, lock and prop, and then also our Underdog Fantasy entry here for tonight, let me tell everyone about our friends over at Underdog Fantasy. You know, we'll try to make a phone call there, Scott, see if we can get a Kyle Lowry flops projection from them. But obviously the NBA playoffs are here, and also the NHL playoffs. And our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy, wants to make it a lot more interesting. Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Playing their pick 'em game is as simple as selecting higher or lower on player stats like points, rebounds, assists, and so much more. You make entries of all basketball, or you can mix and match across your other favorite sports as well, and you can win up to 100 times your money. It's a ton of fun. Underdog is available in 30 plus states, including California, Texas, and even Canada. So hang on. We'll put together our Underdog Fantasy entry here for tonight. And new customers get a pick'em special in the lobby when they sign up. Underdog will also be running a ton of different promos, bonus cash airdrops, specials, giveaways, and more throughout the NBA playoffs. So make sure to follow at Underdog Picks on Twitter to keep an eye out. And like we mentioned, Underdog is available in 30 plus states, including California, Texas, and Canada. They also just launched Champions, their player versus player format in Florida. So make sure you use our promo code NBASGPN, and Underdog will double your first deposit up to $100. Again, that's Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you use our promo code NBASGPN.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up?
because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, Scott, let's get into our picks here for tonight, and then we'll do our underdog fantasy like I mentioned. You want to lead us off?
Sure. So just to ask, are we doing lock dog, lock prop, lock dog and prop? What exactly is the plan for the show?
You know what? I'll give you the option. Let's do a lock for sure, and then if you want to throw out a dog or if you want to throw out a prop.
All right. So for my lock on the show, I think I am going to go with Philly. I was going to take Milwaukee, but we're adding extra stuff, so I can get into that later. Point is, I think Philly's going to win the game. I think the Knicks had a great opportunity. You mentioned so many guys played 50-plus minutes. They're off an overtime game, and I think Philly's got more scoring depth, which I think is going to matter in this game. So give me Philly minus the 3 as my lock. For my dog, give me Milwaukee money line. Let's have some fun with this. I think Milwaukee's pretty live to win this. Now, I know Giannis and Dame now are rumored to maybe make the return. I'm not going to, fully expect that to happen, but you can get the money line for Milwaukee at plus 280. I don't trust Indiana anyway. I think Milwaukee's got a shot to pull this off, and I think that Rick Carlisle, we've seen, has had a really hard time winning playoff series. So give me the Bucks to show their veteran leadership, to show their resolve, and I think they get the job done on the road in Indiana for another Game 7 that's going to happen in a couple days. For my prop, I'm going to go with the team total, if you allow it. Give me the Bucks team total over 102.5 at around minus 110, minus 115. I just think Milwaukee's going to be able to score. I think it's correlated to the dog, but I know Indiana's defense is not very good. Milwaukee scored at least 108 points in every game. Now Giannis and Lillard might return. Knock on wood, we'll see what happens, but Indiana's a bad defensive team. 102.5 is too low. Give me the over on Bucks team total over.
Love it. All right, for my lock, I do love the Sixers here tonight as well, but I think I also do, or I know I, so I do like the under in the game as well. So the Bucks line just reposted. Pacers are still favored by 5 in this game with a total of 215.
Okay, we beat
some
line movement here.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll go with the under in the Knicks and the Sixers game, under 201. And go back to game 5. 97-97 going into overtime. So it would have stayed under the total. But I think it's also the fact that we just mentioned the handicap, that this is a team and both teams that are coming off of that overtime game. And you just take a look at the minutes that a lot of the star players played. And we talked about the minutes both for the Knicks and the Sixers side. There's only been one day off in between, travel involved. So again, when we talk about these series progressing along, that adjustments are being made, you have tired legs, you only have a couple days off in between, and you're coming off that overtime game. And I think that there's going to be another rock fight here tonight. So I would expect, I think maybe the first team to 100 points here wins tonight, and this stays under the total.
I'm not sure either team reaches 100, to be honest, in this game.
Yeah. So I'm thinking like maybe like a 99, 92, something like a 90s final score here between these two teams. So I'll go under 201 in this game between the Knicks and the Sixers. For my prop, I really do like that rebounding one I mentioned for Nick Batum in this game. It's at 4.5 currently over on DraftKings. It's at minus 115. 4 straight games, he's gone over this number. For the Philadelphia 76ers, 5, 7, 7, and 8. If I'm expecting this to be, it's a little bit correlated, right? So if I'm expecting this to be a lower scoring game and mixed shots, then the rebounding opportunities are going to be there. And I think Nick Batum coming off of the bench for the Sixers team has an absolutely fantastic. We saw all the way go back to the play-in tournament games where he was able to turn to Steph Curry. More importantly, he's really, really good on the defensive side and also rebound the basketball. So I do like Nick Batum here over 4.5 rebounds here tonight for the Philadelphia 76ers. So I'll throw out a prop out there as well. But also do agree with about Scott on the money line here for the Bucks. That's now reposted at plus 170. total now up to 216.5 in that game. So
for my dog, am I still allowed to give out bucks 280, or is that not even allowed anymore?
I think, yeah, you would probably have to change that, because now it's up to 105.5 now. I don't think that 3 points may make a lot of difference to you.
But it still sucks, because that was the entire thing I was preaching for the entire show, and now I got to reevaluate. Sure. So I guess we're just
going to think my picks.
What?
It's 105.5 on that team.
I know. Total. The whole point is I like the value on the numbers I got, and now apparently I can't even take it.
Yeah. Because we want to give out something that's widely available now, especially with the news that just came out.
Yeah. So I kind of have to scrap everything. I'm still taking the Sixers as my lock. That's not going to change. For my updated prop, I still don't mind the team total, by the way, at 105 or 106.5, but that defeats the purpose of me trying to give out value if I already missed the line move.
Yeah.
So I think for this one, I am going to go with Embiid rebounds. I know that he tends to struggle, I'd say, with his focus rebounding the ball, but if we're picking a lower scoring game and he just had a monster game on the boards, even in regulation before overtime, I do think you're looking at a spot where Embiid's rebounds are a bit low at 10.5. I want to find the exact best price, though, for Embiid. Embiid rebounds 10.5. It's at minus 135. Sure, I'll take that as my prop. For my dog, I have no damn idea anymore, because I can't use the Bucks game now. I got to figure out what the hell I want to do. For my dog, I don't know what the hell I want in this game.
Did you like Bucks money line? You don't want to give that out anymore.
I did, but I lost $1.50.
Yeah. I mean, I see plus 170s, plus 180s out there.
You know what?
Sixers?
I'll go with something a bit more unique. I'll go with Bucks halftime, full time, but I want to see what the price is. I'm still taking an absolute bath because I just missed half the value if I took it like half an hour ago. But I'll go for a bigger plus money price. Let me quickly just look up what Bucks halftime, full time is, but I'm intrigued by it.
I see plus 255.
Sure. We'll go plus 255. So once again, my updated picks, my lock is Sixers minus 3. My dog is going to be Bucks halftime, full time at plus 255. And my prop is going to be on Embiid over 10.5 rebounds at minus 135. Hopefully you backed the previous plays that I had that I gave out during the show.
This is what you watch live.
Got a bunch of closing line value.
Yeah.
So,
all right, there we go. A lot of picks out there for two games here. So hopefully we do cash in. But I'm really excited for these games here tonight, especially if one of Giannis or Dame or both end up playing here tonight. We may possibly see two game sevens happening on the weekend Thursday. So Saturday night, maybe between these series that
would
are happening.
Would they have them on the same day, or would they space them?
I think they would have them on the, well, because you have the T-Wolves and the Denver Nuggets series game one tipping off on Saturday. But how do you differentiate on which one gets to go on Sunday and gets the extra day of rest? Or you just put both on Sunday.
You could put both on one day, or you could stagger it. I don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, because then you have tomorrow, you have Cavs and Magic.
That could also go 7 in theory.
Clippers and Mavs as well. In theory, that could go 7 as well. So maybe we get 4 game sevens, or who knows? But hopefully we have a couple game sevens to watch, because that would be definitely a lot of fun indeed. All right, Scott, we got one more order of business here. The underdog fantasy entry here for tonight. Again, make sure you guys use that promo code NBASGPN, and we'll put together our underdog fantasy entry here. Now, we might just be at a disadvantage here, Scott, because they probably pulled everything
for Milwaukee.
For the Milwaukee game here. Yeah, they did.
Wouldn't
so, shot. Yeah, we'll have to, maybe I'll put out a social media video once they do repost. But I will mention this. So Scott, you did like the rebounds for Embiid. That number's at 11 on underdog right now. Do you still like that?
Do they have first quarter rebounds or no?
I saw some first quarter stuff here for Embiid. So they have points for Embiid first quarter at 8. They have first quarter assists at 1.5.
But they're probably not going to have rebounds.
Yeah, they don't have rebounds for him, unfortunately.
You know what? We'll just take the 11. Sure.
Okay. So we'll throw that one in there. Maxey first quarter points are at 6. That's kind of tempting.
It's only 2 threes for a push.
Yeah.
He's going to play all 12 minutes.
I expect him to play the entire 48 minutes, yeah. Honestly.
I mean, Nurse, we know, is a guy that doesn't believe in resting players. He's not Thibodeau, but he's close.
Yeah. Isaiah Hartenstein's, I think he's going to be in foul trouble. His PRA is at 17.5.
I don't mind the lower on that.
Yeah, I think we'll go with that. And I don't think we can do one from this. Or actually, we can. So we could just do like a same game entry here for the Knicks and yeah. The Sixers game. All right, so let's just do that. Let's throw out one. Although more
most markets have Maxey first quarter points at 5.5, but we can do 6 if you want it. He has done well recently, though. He's gone higher in 8 of the last 10. So I don't mind it anyway.
Sold. All right, so we'll do that. We'll go Joel Embiid, higher 11 rebounds. We'll go Isaiah Hartenstein, lower 17.5 points, rebounds, and assist. And then we'll go Tyrese Maxey, higher 6 points in the first quarter. That $10 entry will get you a return of $60, courtesy of Underdog Fantasy. Again, make sure you guys use that promo code NBASGPN. If you already have an account and you're in a legal state and of legal age, get your coworkers involved. Family members, friends, whatever the case might be, come get involved with us. Make sure you guys use our promo code NBASGPN. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the NBA Gambling Podcast. Scott, anything else we want to mention before we get out of here?
Yeah, one thing, a complete segue. Did you see Theo Pinston's comments about the Dallas Mavericks on that podcast yesterday?
I saw you retweet. Did you retweet it or somebody?
I did. I was wondering if you actually listened to what he had to say. So he was talking about the Dallas Mavericks. And he said that the Dallas Mavericks would be his pick to come out of the West if they signed a third scorer during the course of the season. Do you want to guess the name he threw out?
Okay, I saw this. Yeah. I'm not going to spoil it for the fans, but I know who you're talking about.
It's Spencer Dinwiddie. Theo Pinston went on a podcast and said that if the Mavericks had signed Spencer Dinwiddie, they would come out of the West. Do NBA players or former NBA players not watch basketball? I don't understand how people that play the sport for a living can be this clueless when it comes to opinions. Dinwiddie? Are you out of your mind? He shouldn't be in the league. Have you been watching him with the Lakers? What the hell are you talking about? I know that they were teammates on Brooklyn, and I think they were teammates on Dallas, actually. So they're like close. I get that they're like, you know, friends. What the hell are you talking about? That's the last point I want to make. That's one of the dumbest things I've heard. Dinwiddie shouldn't be in the league.
You'll probably end up seeing him in the in either the CBA or the China Basketball Association next season. Or maybe some type of Euro team next year. But again,
it reminds me of the Draymond new media comment. It's like, yeah, the old media is out. The new media is here where players give opinions. The player opinions are even worse than the media opinions, which I find crazy.
I just honestly think it's clickbait sometimes for these guys.
I think it is too. But Pinston, I don't know if he's in the clickbait business, but I think he just might really like Dinwiddie and he just hasn't watched him play in a year. So there you go. That's the one thing I wanted to mention. I wanted to mention the Pinson comments because those are wild. Those are dumber than the Charles Barkley, Darvin Ham comments.
Ryan got you a better number there for the Milwaukee Bucks to win both halves. Plus
that was to win both halves individually, though. That's not to leave.
Oh, you wanted for halftime, full-time, full game. Yeah. Okay. All right. That's going to do it. Make sure you guys follow Scott on Twitter, that's at Rice Show Radio. You can follow me there as well at SportsNerd824. More importantly, make sure you guys subscribe to the NBA Gambling Podcast YouTube channel there as well. And if you haven't already left us a rating and review, please go in and do so. That would definitely help us out to grow the podcast as well. Back tomorrow at the usual time with Scott and Terrell. So look out for us then. Till then, good luck with your bets. Let's break these books off and let it ride. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba basketball, give me the ball because I'm gonna dunk it. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba basketball, give me the ball.
dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
I won't let my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. In two clinical studies, Tremfya guselkumab, taken by injection, provided 90% clear skin at 16 weeks in 7 out of 10 adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. In a study, nearly 7 out of 10 patients with 90% clear skin at 16 weeks were still clearer at 5 years. At 1 year and thereafter, patients and healthcare providers knew that Tremfya was being used. This may have increased results. Results may vary.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.